Chapter 26. Sally Deira. The halo of greatness, blue and gold, flickered fitfully around Loghain's head, though he rode slumped in his saddle. Min did not understand why it had appeared more often of late. He no longer even bothered to lift his eyes from the weeds in front of his black stallion to the low wooded hills rolling by all around them. The other two women rode together a little ahead, Swan as awkward on shaggy Bella as she had ever been, Lyanna guiding her grey mare deftly, with knees more than reins. Only an unnaturally straight ribbon of ferns poking through the leaf-covered forest floor hinted that there had ever been a road here. The lacy ferns were withering, and the leaf-mould rustled and crackled dryly under the horse's hooves. Thickly woven branches gave a little shelter from the noonday sun, but it was hardly cool. Sweat rolled down Min's face, despite an occasional breeze that stirred from behind them. 15 days now they had ridden west and south from Lugard, guided only by Swan's insistence that she knew exactly where they were heading. Not that she shared her destination, of course. Swan and Lyanna were as close-mouthed as sprung bear traps. Min was not even sure that Lyanna actually knew. 15 days while towns and villages grew fewer and farther between, until finally there were none. Day by day Loghain's shoulders had sagged a little more, and day by day the halo appeared more often. At first he had only begun muttering that they were chasing Jack of the Mists, but Swan had regained her leadership without opposition as he turned more and more inward. For the past 6 days he had not seemed to have the energy to care where they were going or whether they would ever get there. Swan and Lyanna talked quietly up ahead now. All Min could hear was a barely audible murmur that might as well have been the wind in the leaves. And if she tried to ride closer, they would tell her to keep an eye on Loghain, or simply stare at her until only a stone-blind fool could keep her nose where it did not belong. They had done both, often enough. From time to time, though, Lyanna twisted in her saddle to look at Loghain. Finally Lyanna let Moonflower fall back beside his black stallion. The heat did not seem to be bothering her. Not so much as a sheen of perspiration marred her coppery face. Min reined Wild Rose aside to give her room.
"It won't be long now," Lyanna told him in a sultry voice.
He did not look up from the weeds in front of his horse. She leaned closer, holding his arm for balance, pressing against it, really.
"A little while longer, darlin'. You will have your revenge."
His eyes stayed dully on the road. "A dead man would pay more notice," Min said, and meant it. She'd been taking notes in her head of everything Lyanna did, and talking with her of an evening, though trying not to let on why. She would never be able to behave the way that Lyanna did, not unless I had enough wine in me that I couldn't think at all. Yet a few pointers might come in handy. "Maybe if you kissed him." Lyanna shot her a glare that could have frozen a rushing stream, but Min merely looked back. She had never had the problems with Lyanna that she did with Suan. Well, not as many, anyway. And the few difficulties had grown less since the other woman had left the tower. Much fewer since they had begun discussing men. How could you be intimidated by a woman who had told you in dead seriousness that there were 107 different kisses and 93 ways to touch a man's face with your hand? Lyanna actually seemed to believe these things. Min had not meant it as a jibe, really, the suggestion of a kiss. Lyanna had been cooing at him, giving him smiles that should have made steam rise from his ears since the day he had had to be hauled out of his blankets instead of rising first to chivy the rest of them. Min did not know whether Lyanna actually felt something for the man, though she did find it hard to credit even the possibility, or was just trying to keep him from giving up and dying, to keep him alive for whatever Swan had planned. Lyanna certainly had not given up flirting with others besides him. She and Swan had apparently worked out that Swan would deal with women, Lyanna with men, and so it had been ever since Lugard. Her smiles and glances had twice gotten them rooms where the innkeeper had said there were none, lowered the bill at those and three more, and on 2 nights earned barns instead of bushes for sleeping. They had also gotten the four of them chased off by one farm wife with a pitchfork and a breakfast of cold porridge thrown at them by another, but Liana had thought the incidents funny if no one else did. The last few days, however, Loghain had stopped reacting like every other man who saw her for more than 2 minutes. He had stopped reacting to her or anything else. Swan pulled Bella back stiffly, elbows out and managing to look on the point of falling off any moment. The heat was not touching her either. "Have you viewed him today?" She hardly glanced at Loghain. "It is still the same," Min said patiently. Swan refused to understand or believe, however many times she told her, and so did Liana. It would not have mattered if she had not seen the aura since her first viewing of it in Tar Valon. Had Loghain been lying in the road, rasping his death rattle, she would have wagered all she had and more on a miraculous recovery, somehow. The appearance of an Aes Sedai to heal him. Something. What she saw was always true. It always happened. She knew the same way that she had known the first time she saw Randall Thor that she would fall desperately, helplessly in love with him. The same way she had known she would have to share him with two other women. Loghain was destined for glory such as few men had dreamed of. "Don't you take that tone with me," Suan said, that blue-eyed gaze sharpening. "It is bad enough we have to spoon-feed this great hairy carp to make him eat, without you going sulky as a fisher bird in winter. I may have to put up with him, girl, but if you start giving me trouble too, you will regret it in short order. Do I make myself clear?"
"Yes, Mara."
At least you could have put a touch of sarcasm in it, she thought scornfully. "You don't have to be meek as a goose. You've told Liana off to her face." The Damani woman had suggested that she practice what they had been discussing on a farrier in the last village. A tall, handsome man, with strong-looking hands and a slow smile. But still,
I will try not to be sulky.
The worst part was that she realized she had tried to sound sincere. Suan had that effect. Min could not even begin to imagine Suan discussing how to smile at a man. Suan would look a man in the eye, tell him what to do, and expect to see it done promptly, just the way she did with everyone else. If she did anything else, as she had with Loghain, it would only be because the point did not matter enough to press. "It is not much farther, is it?" Liana said briskly. She saved the other voice for men. "I do not like the look of him, and if we have to stop for another night... Well, if he helps any less than he did this morning, I don't know that we will be able to get him into his saddle again."
"Not much, if those last directions I had are right."
Swan sounded irritated. She had asked questions at that last village 2 days ago, not letting Min hear, of course. Loghain had showed no interest, and she did not like to be reminded of them. Min could not understand why. Suan could hardly expect Elida to be behind them. She herself hoped it was not much farther. It was hard to be sure how far south they had drifted since leaving the highway to Johanna. Most villagers had only vague notions of where their village actually was in relation to anything except the nearest towns, but when they crossed the Manetharan Drell into Altara just before Suan took them away from the well-traveled road, the grizzled old ferryman had been studying a tattered map for some reason, a map that stretched as far as the Mountains of Mist. Unless her estimate was off, they were going to reach another wide river in not many miles, either the Bourne, which meant they were already into Gildan, where the Prophet and his mobs were, or else the Eldar, with Amadisia and White Cloaks on the far side. She was betting on Gildan, Prophet or no Prophet, and even that was a surprise if they were really close. Only a fool would think to find a gathering of Aes Sedai any nearer to Amadisia than they had to be, and Suan was anything but that. Whether they were in Gildan or Altara, Amadisia had to be not many miles distant.
"Gentling would have to catch up to him now," Suan muttered. "If he can only hang on a few more days."
Min kept her mouth shut. If the woman would not listen, there was no use in speaking. Shaking her head, Swan heeled Bella back into the lead, gripping her reins as though expecting the stout mare to bolt,
and Lyanna returned to silken-voiced cajoling of Loghain. Maybe she did have feelings for him. It would be no odder a choice than Min's own. Forested hills slid on by with never a sign of change, all trees and tangles of weeds and brambles. The ferns that marked the old road ran on, arrow straight. Lyanna had said the soil was different where the road had been, as if Min should have known that. Squirrels with tufted ears sometimes chattered at them from a branch, and occasionally birds called. Which birds, Min could not begin to guess. Bearlawn might not be a city when compared to Camelin or Ilion or Tyr, but she thought of herself as a city woman. A bird was a bird, and she did not care what kind of dirt a fern grew in. Her doubts began to surface again. They had oozed up more than once after Khor Springs, but back then it had been easier to push them down. Since Lugard, they had bubbled to the top more often, and she found herself considering Swan in ways she would never have dared once. Not that she had the nerve to actually confront Swan with any of them, of course. It galled her to admit that, even to herself. But maybe Swan did not know where she was going. She could lie, since stilling broke her away from the three oaths. Maybe she was still just hoping that if she continued searching, she would find some trace of what she needed desperately to find. In a small way, a peculiar way surely, Lyanna had begun making a life for herself apart from concerns of power and the power and Rand. Not that she had abandoned them entirely, but Min did not think that there was anything else for Suan. The White Tower and the Dragon Reborn were the whole of her life, and she would hold to them even if she had to lie to herself. Woodland gave way to a large village so quickly that Min stared. Sweet gum and oak and scrubby pine, those were trees she could recognize, running to within 50 paces of thatch-roofed houses made of rounded river stones and clinging to low hills. She was willing to wager that not so long ago the forest had grown right through. A good many trees actually stood in narrow little thickets among some of the houses, crowding against the walls, and here and there unweathered stumps stood close by the front of a house. The streets still had a look of new-turned earth, not the hard-packed surface that came from generations of feet. Men in their shirt-sleeves were up laying new thatch atop three large stone cubes that had to have been inns. One actually had the remains of a faded, weathered sign dangling above the door, yet no old thatch lay anywhere that she could see. There were far too many women out and about for the number of men in sight, and far too few children playing for the number of women. The smells of midday cooking in the air were the only normal things about the place. If the first glimpse startled Min, when she really saw what lay in front of her, she nearly fell out of her saddle. The younger women, shaking blankets from a window or hurrying on some errand, wore plain woolen dresses, but no village of any size had ever contained so many women in riding dresses of silk or fine wool, in every color and cut. Around those women and around most of the men, auras and images floated before her eyes, changing and flickering. Most people rarely had anything for her viewing, but Aes Sedai and warders seldom lacked an aura for as much as an hour. The children must have belonged to tower servants. Aes Sedai who married were few and far between, but knowing them, they would have made every effort to bring their servants, with their families, out of any place they felt that they must flee themselves. Swan had found her gathering. There was an eerie stillness as they rode into the village. No one spoke. Aes Sedai stood without moving, watching them, and so did younger women and girls who must be accepted, or even novices. Men who a moment before had been moving with wolfish grace were frozen, one hand hidden in thatch or reaching into a doorway, doubtless where weapons were hidden. The children vanished, hurriedly herded away by the adults who had to be servants. Under all those unwinking stares, the hair on the back of Min's neck tried to stand up. Lyanna appeared uneasy, casting sidelong glances at the people they rode past, but Swan stayed smooth-faced and calm as she led the way straight to the largest inn, the one with the unreadable sign, and scrambled down to tie Bella to the iron ring of one of the stone hitching posts that appeared to have been only recently set upright. Helping Lyanna help Loghain to the ground, Swan never offered a hand in getting him up or down, Min found her eyes darting around. Everyone staring, no one moving. I never expected to be greeted like a long-lost daughter, she murmured to the other woman. But why isn't anyone at least saying hello? Before Liana could answer, if she meant to, Swan said, Well, don't stop pulling oar with the shore in reach. Bring him on in. She disappeared inside while Min and Liana were still guiding Loghain to the door. He went easily, but when they ceased to urge him, he took only one step before stopping. The common room looked like none Min had ever seen before. The wide fireplaces were cold, of course, and had gaps where stones had fallen out. The plaster ceiling looked rotten, with holes in it as big as her head where the lathing showed. Mismatched tables of every size and shape stood about on an age-roughened floor that several girls were sweeping. Women with ageless faces sat examining parchments, giving orders to warders, a few of whom wore their color-shifting cloaks, or to other women, some of whom had to be accepted or novices. Others were too old for that, perhaps half of them graying and clearly showing their years, and there were men who were not warders too, most either darting off as though carrying messages, or else fetching parchments or cups of wine to the Aes Sedai. The bustle had a satisfying air of something being done. Auras and images danced around the room, wreathing heads, so many that she had to try to ignore them before they overwhelmed her. It was not easy, but it was a trick she had had to learn when around more than a handful of Aes Sedai at once. Four Aes Sedai glided forward to meet the newcomers, all grace and cool serenity in their divided skirts. For Min, seeing their familiar features was like reaching home after being lost. Shiriam's tilted green eyes fixed immediately on Min's face. Rays of silver and blue flashed about her fiery hair, and a soft golden light. Min could not say what it meant. Slightly plump in her dark blue silk, at the moment she was sternness itself. I would be happier to see you, child, if I knew how you discovered our presence here, and if I had some inkling of why you conceived the crack-brained idea of bringing him. Half a dozen warders had drifted near, hands resting on swords, eyes sharp on Loghain. He did not seem to see them at all. Min gaped. Why were they asking her? My crack-br— She had no chance to say more. It would be far better, pale-cheeked Carlinia cut in icily, if he had died as the rumors say. It was not the ice of anger, but of cold reason. She was white, Adja. Her ivory-colored dress looked as if it had had hard wear. For an instant, Min saw an image of a raven floating beside her dark hair, more a drawing of the bird than the bird itself. She thought it was a tattoo, but she did not know its meaning. She concentrated on faces, tried not to see anything else. He looks nearly dead in any event, Carlinia continued, hardly taking breath. Whatever you thought, you have wasted your effort. But I, too, would like to know how you came to Salidar. Swan and Liana stood there exchanging smugly amused glances while the onslaught went on. No one even looked at them. Mirel, darkly beautiful in green silk embroidered on the bodice with slanting lines of gold, her face a perfect oval, usually wore a knowing smile that at times could rival Liana's new tricks. She was not smiling now as she jumped in right behind the white sister. Speak up, Min. Don't stand there gaping like a dolt. She was known for her fiery temper, even among the greens. You must tell us, Anaya added in a more kindly voice. Exasperation tinged it, though. A blunt-featured woman, and motherly despite Aes Sedai's smoothness to her face, at the moment stroking her pale gray skirts, she looked like a mother who was trying not to reach for a switch. We will find a place for you and these other two girls, but you must tell us how you came here. Min shook herself and closed her mouth. Of course. These other two girls. She had grown so used to them as they were that she no longer thought of how much they had changed. She doubted whether any of these women had seen either since they were hauled off to the dungeons beneath the White Tower. Liana looked ready to laugh, and Swan all but shook her head in disgust at the Aes Sedai. I am not the one you want to talk to, Min told Shiriam. Let these other two girls have those stares on them for a change. Ask Sawan, or Liana?" They stared at her as if she were mad, until she nodded to her two companions. Four sets of Aes Sedai eyes shifted to the others, but there was no instant recognition. They studied and frowned and passed glances between them. None of the warders took their eyes from Loghain or their hands from their swords.
"Stilling might produce this effect," Mirel murmured finally. "I have read accounts that imply as much."
"The faces are close in many ways," Shiriam said slowly. "Someone could have found women who look much like them, but why?" Suan and Liana did not look smug any longer. "We are who we are," Liana said crisply. "Question us. No imposter could know what we know." Suan did not wait for questions. "My face may be changed, yet at least I know what I am doing and why. That is more than I can say for you, I'll wager."
Men groaned at her steely tone, but Mirel nodded, saying, "That is Suan Sanchez's voice. It is she."
"Voices can be trained," Carlinia said, still coolly calm.
"But how far can memories be taught?"
Anaya frowned sternly. "Suan, if that is who you are, on your 22nd name day we had an argument, you and I. Where did it occur, and what was the outcome?"
Suan smiled confidently at the motherly woman.
"During your lecture to the accepted on why so many of the nations carved out of Ardor Hawkwing's empire after his death failed to survive, I still disagree with you on some points, by the way. The outcome was that I spent 2 months working 3 hours a day in the kitchens, in the hope that the heat will overpower and diminish your ardor, I think you said."
If she had thought that one answer would be sufficient, she was wrong.
Anaya had more questions for both women, and so did Carlinia and Shiriam, who apparently had been novices and accepted with the pair. They were all about the sort of thing no imposter would be able to learn, scrapes gotten into, pranks successful and not, opinions generally held of various Aes Sedai teachers. Men could not believe that the women who would become the Ammerlin's seat and the Keeper of the Chronicles could have dropped themselves into the soup so often, but she had the impression that this was only the tip of a buried mountain, and it appeared that Shiriam herself might not have been far behind them. Mirel, the youngest by years, confined herself to amused comments, until Suan said something about a trout put into Saroya Sedai's bath and a novice taught to mind her ways for half a year. Not that Suan had much room to talk of anyone minding her ways. Washing a disliked accepted's shifts with itchweed when she was a novice? Sneaking out of the tower to go fishing? Even accepted needed permission to leave the tower grounds except during certain hours. Suan and Liana together had even chilled a bucket of water to near freezing and set it so it would douse an Aes Sedai who had had them switched, unfairly as they saw it. From the glint in Anaya's eyes, it was a good thing for them that they had not been found out that time. From what Min knew of novice training, and accepted for that matter, these women were lucky that they'd been allowed to remain long enough to become Aes Sedai, much less that they still had whole hides.
"I am satisfied," the motherly woman said at last, glancing at the others.
Mirel nodded after Shiriam did, but Carlinia said, "There is still the question of what to do with her." She stared right at Suan, unblinking, and the others suddenly seemed uneasy. Mirel pursed her lips, and Anaya studied the floor. Smoothing her dress, Shiriam seemed to avoid looking at the newcomers at all.
"We still know everything we knew before," Liana told them, her sudden frown at least half worry. "We can be of use."
Suan was dark-faced. Liana had seemed amused, if anything, at her recounted girlhood misdeeds and penalties, but Suan had not liked the telling one bit. Yet, in contrast to her near glare, her voice was only a little tight.
"You wanted to know how we found you. I made contact with one of my agents who also works for the Blue, and she told me of Sally Dara."
Min did not understand that about Sally Dara at all. Who was she? But Shiriam and the others nodded at one another. Suan had done something other than tell them how, Min realized. She had let them know that she still had access to the eyes and ears who had served her as Ammerlin. "You sit over there, Min," Shiryam told Min, pointing to the one table not in use in a corner. "Or are you still Elmindrada? And keep Loghain with you." She and the other three gathered Suan and Liana, herding them toward the back of the common room. Two more women in riding dresses joined them before they vanished through a new-made door of uncured boards. Sighing, Min took Loghain's arm and led him to the table, sat him down on a rough bench and took a shaky ladder-back chair herself. Two of the warders positioned themselves nearby, leaning against the wall. They did not appear to be watching Loghain, but Min knew the Gaidin. They saw everything, and they could have their swords out in less than a heartbeat while sleeping. So there were to be no open arms in welcome, even with Suan and Liana recognized. Well, what did she expect? Suan and Liana had been the two most powerful women in the White Tower. Now they were not even Aes Sedai. The others very likely did not know how to behave toward them. And appearing with a gentled false dragon. Suan had better not be lying or wishing about having a plan for him. Min did not think Shiryam and the others would be as patient as Loghain had been. And Shiryam, at least, had recognized her. She stood again, long enough to peer through a crack-paned window into the street. Their horses were still at the hitching posts, but one of those warders who were not watching would have her before she had Wild Rose's reins untied. This last time in the tower, Suan had gone to great lengths to disguise her. To no end, it seemed. She did not think any of them knew about her viewings, though. Suan and Liana had held that tightly to themselves. Min would be just as glad if it remained that way. If these Aes Sedai learned of it, they would entangle her just as Suan had, and she would never reach Rand. She was not going to be able to show off what she had learned from Liana if they kept her on a leash here. Helping Suan find this gathering, helping bring Aes Sedai to Rand's aid, was all very well and important, but she still had a personal goal. Making a man who had never looked at her twice fall in love with her before he went mad. Maybe she was as mad as he was fated to be. "Then we'll make a matched pair," she muttered to herself. A freckled, green-eyed girl, who had to be a novice, stopped at her table. "Would you like something to eat or drink? There is venison stew and wild pears. There might be some cheese, too." She put so much effort into not looking at Loghain that she might as well have stared pop-eyed. "Pears and cheese sound very good," Min told her. The last 2 days had been hungry. Suan had managed to catch some fish in a stream, but Loghain had done all the hunting when they had not eaten at an inn or a farm. Dried beans did not make a meal, in her opinion. "And some wine, if you have it. But first, I would like some information. Where are we, if it isn't a secret here, too? This village is called Salidar?" "In Altara. The Eldar is about a mile to the west. Amadisia is on the other side." The girl put on a poor imitation of Aes Sedai mystery. "Where better to hide Aes Sedai than where they would never be looked for?" "We should not have to hide," a dark, curly-haired young woman snapped, stopping. Min recognized her, an accepted named Faelaine. She would have expected her to be in the tower still. Faelaine had never liked anyone or anything, as far as Min knew, and had often spoken of choosing the Red Aja when she was raised, a perfect follower for Elida. "Why did you come here? With him? Why did she come?" There was no doubt in Min's mind who she meant. "It is her fault we have to hide. I did not believe she helped Mazrim Time to escape, but if she appears here with him, maybe she did." "That will be enough, Faelaine," a slender woman with black hair spilling down her back to her waist told the round-faced accepted. Min thought she knew the woman in the dark golden silk riding dress. Adesina, a yellow, she believed. "Go about your duties," Adesina said. "And if you mean to bring food, Tabaya, do it." Adesina did not watch Faelaine's sullen curtsy. The novice gave a better and scurried away, but put a hand on Loghain's head instead. Eyes on the table, he did not seem to notice. To Min's eyes, a silvery collar suddenly appeared, snug around the woman's neck, and as suddenly seemed to shatter. Min shivered. She did not like viewings connected to the Shan Chan.
At least Adesina would escape somehow. Even if Min had been willing to expose herself, there was no point in warning the woman. It would not change anything.
"It is the gentling," the Aes Sedai said after a moment. "He has given up on wanting to live, I suppose. There is nothing I can do for him. Not that I am sure I should, if I could."
The look she gave Min before leaving was far from friendly. An elegant, statuesque woman in russet silk paused a few feet away, coolly examining Min and Loghain with expressionless eyes. Kirunna was a green, and regal in her manner. She was a sister of the King of Arafel, so Min had heard, but she had been friendly to Min in the tower. Min smiled, but those large, dark eyes swept over her without recognition, and Kirunna glided out of the inn. Four warders, disparate men, but all with that deadly-seeming way of moving, suddenly healing her. Waiting for her food, Min hoped that Swan and Liana were finding a warmer reception.